Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Knicks at Night podcast. I'm your host, Sean Aquino. Thanks for joining us tonight. That was a little bit of the Latvian group there. I guess they're called Transliterus. Hashtag Porzingis. Tonight on the Knicks at Night show, opening up the broadcast after Kristaps had the best game of his career last night at MSG. 29 points, 11 rebounds for our star rookie who's taken NYC by storm. This is a big, big show because we have a lot to discuss. Obviously, it looks like the Phil Jackson pick has or is working out after 12 games. The Knicks are 6-6. And after the we first looked at the schedule and we saw the opponents the Knicks had, it was looking pretty difficult. And for the Knicks to have a 500 record at this point is very, very, very impressive. So we have a lot to talk about. Let's get right to it. Tonight we're going to have Frank Nutt, Greg Armstrong are going to be joining me tonight. Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Mr. Armstrong, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Things are going really well right now. I mean, like you said, 6-6. I would have signed up for that before the season if you would have told me that with that tough beginning of the season schedule and not knowing, you know, how the team would gel, being that we had so many new guys coming into the mix and being without a follow. So, yeah, it was really good getting through that minefield at 6-6. And, you know, the schedule should be opening up, softening up a little bit soon after this road trip. So, you know, as long as they keep progressing the way they've been, you know, we might be in for some, you know, a surprise here. You know, a lot of people have been picking the Knicks as a surprise team. So, yeah, they might be right. So things are good. The guard is exciting. The last game at the Garden against Charlotte, the Porzingis. It was just unbelievable. You know, you got Willis Reed sitting courtside. You have Patrick Ewing on the opposite bench. So you're talking two of the greatest big men in the history of the franchise in the building. Yeah. And this rookie puts on a performance like he did that night, 29 points, 11 rebounds. He was just sensational, you know, a little shake action there, a little stop and pop for the three, just unbelievable, the things he can do. So, you know, we're blessed right now. The team is doing well, and let's hope it continues.
Yeah, no, definitely. Did you hear the song? Were you able to hear it well, or was it kind of muffled there?
No, I heard it. I didn't know what it was. I was like, what the heck is this?
Did I call it into the wrong studio or whatever? Yeah, no.
Yes.
I mean, have you seen the video? I think it was released a little bit after he was drafted. Have you ever seen the video?
I think I did see the video. Come to think of it now, yeah, that you mentioned it. I think I did see the video. And this kid is just taking New York by storm. I mean, we caught a glimpse of it early on in the summer. He's been saying and doing all the right things. You know, he's a great guy, easy to root for, and, you know, he's just so talented. I mean, for his size, everything that he can do is just off the charts, and you could see it. You could see it's just a matter of time when he gets comfortable, you know, in his body and doing the things that he can do, and also just getting a little stronger, you know, which is not going to hurt, you know, him getting a little stronger. He's going to be an unstoppable force, and we have him on the Knicks roster for the next 10 to 15 years. So this is an exciting time for a Knicks fan.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I mean, when the pick was made, we all thought, okay, 1 to 2, you know, maybe not this year, but we just wanted him to average a little bit under 20 minutes a game and show some promise. And I think part of the game that kind of stands out to me the most, obviously we caught him in summer league and we saw defensively he looked pretty active, he looked pretty solid. But the rebounding, he's averaging nearly 9 rebounds a game now. You were at the game yesterday. Talk to us about the activity level that you were able to see from your seats in terms of the energy, the way that he attacks the glass, the way everything that he does defensively. He just seems to be active at all times for a guy that size. That's really rare. What did you see that really stood out to you last night or two nights ago?
You hit it right on the head. His activity for a guy his size and, you know, his stamina, he's able to do it because a lot of big guys, they have a tendency to, you know, run out of gas if they, you know, display that type of, you know, activity. He's all over the place. I mean, he plays like a 6'8", 6'9", type of jumping jack type of guy. Anything that goes up on the glass, he's going after. Especially the offensive glass. Look out. Anything on the offensive glass. And the thing is, he's so tall that even when he's boxed out, he can come over the top without committing a foul and still grab a rebound. I mean, these are things that not many people can do. So, yeah, his activity level is energizing Madison Square Garden. You know, the way he moves, you know, for his size and the way he can step back, and he's got that fluid shot on his three, which is still something that he's been struggling with. But imagine when he gets his offensive game, his shooting percentage up and, you know, starts really making shots because he's putting up these numbers and he's not really efficient offensively at this point.
You hit it right on the head. I mean, I think Chris Herring came up to wrote an article yesterday that basically said that out of all Euros, it's very, very rare for a European player to shoot at a high percentage, above 35% from downtown, because of the fact they're so used to the old way of shooting. And even Jose Calderon, who, you know, now has a career 40-plus percent average, Dirk Nowitzki, these guys, they all shot in their 20s early on. And I thought that was an unbelievable statistic, which kind of let us know, you know what, as long as the shot mechanics are there, which they clearly are with KP, once he gets his legs and he gets used to the range, he is going to be able to do what he needs to do for downtown. And that is what is scary for the rest of the league. Another thing, you know, you're mentioning is that his stamina. It looks like now he's truly getting his legs underneath him, where 25 minutes a game doesn't really bother him. I mean, he's been hitting 28 to 30, and I think 3 of the last 4 games or so. So that's just a great development to see.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to see him in these games in the fourth quarter, closing out the game because of his length on defense. I mean, you've given me a lot of numbers over the course of the season, and some of the numbers you've given me in particular about when he's on the floor, how the Knicks' defensive rating is much better. So that's one thing that I would like to see late in games. You know, when I was watching the Cleveland game the other night and they took him off the floor, you know, with about four or five minutes left in the game. And I was like, what are you doing, Fisher? Keep that guy on the floor. He's a game changer. So,
right.
You know, I mean, he put him back in with about a minute and a half left. But that's a guy you want to close the games with. You know, his length down in the paint preventing teams from scoring. So you want to stop opponents late in these games. So that's another thing that I look forward to in his progression with Fishers. Leave him in those games. Don't pull him late in the games.
Right. I mean, that's such valuable experience. I mean, especially defensively. One of the stats that I did also send you was that stat that said that opponents shoot against Porzingis about 40% from the floor. I mean, that's in the Knicks are 11 points better with him on the floor. And I think that also the Knicks defense has improved by the Knicks playing Aaron to follow 25 minutes a game versus having Sasha Vujicic out there for 20 to 25 minutes a game. Afalo isn't the type of defender he used to be 3-4 years ago, but he is at least an average enough defender where he doesn't kill you like Sasha was. So now the Knicks are starting off better defensively, where you have Robin Lopez, who's a plus defender, Porzingis is a plus defender, and Afalo is an average defender. And that helps. And Carmelo's playing defense at about an average level now. Calderon's still below average, for sure. But that has totally changed. I mean, I think that's where you see the Knicks. I think the Knicks are 14th. They're ranked 14th in the NBA in defensive efficiency. And I think a lot of that has to do with Porzingis' growth. I mean, Robin Lopez is only averaging 25 minutes a game, just about as much as KP. And when they're out there together, I mean, they're a really strong defensive duo. I mean, you could see it.
Yeah, for sure. You have 2 7-footers on the floor, you know, and Lopez, he's known as a defender. This is where he's hung his hat for the duration of his career. And now you got another guy, 7'3", who can switch out, you know, and jump out on guards and, you know, do all kinds of stuff. It's scary, the potential, you know, that this defense has. And now you have a Flower back, which, like you said, gives us some perimeter defense. And when they throw Galloway in the game, who's a pretty good defender out on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's really coming together more than I thought. I have to admit, this early in the season, I didn't expect that they would be able to be this competitive, you know, this soon. So, you know, I'm really excited. I'm really happy. You know, when I go to the game, I'm excited, you know, to go to the Garden. I'm not selling many tickets. You know, I'm there. I'm in my seat. I'm ready to go. I can't wait until Miami comes in on the 27th. I already have it circled down.
Oh, I can't wait for that either.
Yeah, a couple days after Thanksgiving. So that should be pretty good. So, you know, we got an interesting stretch coming up. We're going on the road. You have OKC and Houston in the back-to-back, which should be interesting.
Right.
From what I'm hearing, Kevin Durant may not play in this OKC game. We may catch a break there, only because it's not a playoff-type situation. And they said if it was a playoff game, he probably could play, but they've been erring on the side of caution, and understandably so. You don't want him to, you know, have any more problems going forward, so he may not play. So we may catch a break there, but nevertheless, going into OKC, that's always been a tough place for the Knicks. I remember last year, that was a tough game, man. They smoked us pretty good. So,
we still
have our hands full with Westbrook. But I think with the way we've been playing on the road, the way we've been competing, we have a good shot at winning any game. Our defense is that good.
Well, you could legitimately say that the Knicks have been in every game.
Yeah.
You know, they've been in every game, all 12 games. They've lost 6, 2 of them, which to me, with better rotations, they should have won. I mean, the Charlotte game, they should have won. But definitely in the Cleveland game, I think they could have done better. Like you said, they took Porzingis out. So, yeah, the Knicks could easily be 8-4. And in those 6 losses, they were in every single one of those games. So that's improvement.
Yeah, significant improvement. The talk of the town, I can tell you, you're out there in L.A., I'm here in New York, the buzz is coming. I mean, 2 straight days, Porzingis has been on the back page of the New York papers. You know, it's like it's huge. Every time I turn on the radio, you know, they're talking about him in sports talk. You turn on the TV, ESPN, they're doing features on him. Even Stephen A. Smith has turned around. I mean, he used to kill.
Oh,
he was killing
God, yeah. I love that aspect of it. I love it.
You know, so you got guys,
yeah.
Charles Barkley. I heard a quote today. Charles Barkley says, Porzingis is the odds-on favorite to win the Rookie of the Year now. So, I mean, wow. I mean, these guys were perennial Nick haters. You know?
And, well, right. I know. It's crazy. I would say Towns still has the advantage. He's averaging, what, 2 more rebounds, 4 more points. He's playing about 5 to 6, 7 more minutes. But and Minnesota's near 500 as well. So I'd still say Towns right now, but Porzingis is too. And if the Knicks make the playoffs and Minnesota doesn't, then you could and the numbers are the same, which I truly believe KP's numbers are only going to get better. Like we talked about, his three-point shooting, I think, is going to get better as he gets more legs underneath him. I mean, it's a chance. He'll be in a conversation at the end there for sure. Because Okafor is averaging, I think, more than everybody, but, you know, Philly's 0-11.
Nah, he
so
don't count. He don't count.
It doesn't really matter.
Defense. His team is
right, terrible.
You know, he's, you know, probably the worst big man defender in the league. Can't guard a pick and roll. I don't even put him in the equation. If you ask me, it's a two-player race. It's between Towns and Porzingis. And, you know, like we said, Porzingis looked like he's on the upswing. He's getting – not that Towns is not going to get better, too. Don't get me wrong. But
right.
the upside that Porzingis has, you know, he's definitely going to have a shot at this. And if you ask a lot of people before the season, no one would have thought that he would have a shot. And think about that little kid now. Remember the little kid that was on TV, on ESPN during the draft? I mean,
Yeah,
that poor kid is tormented for life now. You know, he's getting killed.
Yeah.
You know, taking a selfie, crying on national TV, and then he doesn't even he didn't even know who Porzingis was. I'm like, what is this? Your dad put you up to it? What is this?
Do you think he gets his ass kicked at school? You think kids are taking like being up at school?
Yeah, his dad is not living in New York. If he lives in New York, he's getting it every day. His dad is going to have to probably move, going to have to move out the state because everybody's seen his face. Everybody knows him. You know, he's just going to get it.
Yeah.
He's just going to, you know, he's going to be getting wedgies. They're going to be hanging him up on the fence at school.
And deservedly so. Deservedly so. Being called Four Eyes. Oh, he deserves all that stuff for sure.
For sure,
but, you know,
man.
Frank's on the phone. Frank, I want to bring you in. You are the guy that at the Knicks Tonight podcast draft edition, Frank, you're the one that played the role of Phil Jackson. You selected Kristaps Porzingis. So,
I did.
You know, you made it happen, man.
I don't know if I made it happen per se all by myself. You know, it's funny. I was just listening to you guys for the last couple of minutes and, you know, I think it's interesting because there's going to come a point in the season, and it comes every year around January, February, where rookies hit that rookie wall or they don't hit the rookie wall and you start to see their true ability. It's tough to say right now that, Porzingis is, you know, he's averaging this and this and he's, you know, he's going to be the rookie of the year or Towns going to be the rookie of the year. I think three guys have a chance to be the rookie of the year. I think Porzingis is one. Although my biggest thing with Porzingis, if the Knicks are true to form, they said they're going to keep him around 20-25 minutes. I don't know if he'll have enough minutes to win the rookie of the year. Or you have Karl-Anthony Towns, who I haven't heard anything about a minutes restriction. He's a big part of what they do. I mean, he starts, he plays, you know, 28-32 minutes a game. And then obviously Okafor, just because his numbers are going to be crazy because he has no one around him.
Right.
You know, so I think we'll have a really good sense February of who's going to be the rookie of the year. I mean, Sean, you've seen some of the numbers. Karl-Anthony Towns is doing things that literally like the five best centers in NBA history have done. Like, you know, like his rebounds, blocks, and I think he was the first. he was one of five, like, and the five was like Robinson, Duncan,
Shaq,
yeah, and Karl Anthony Towns. And we're like, you know, and Kareem may have been the other one, and who did like something crazy, you know, so 12 right. points, 12 or 12 rebounds and six blocks. I don't know, some crazy.
Yeah.
But so I definitely think it's like it's a three dog race. I think Porzingis has a chance, but again, I mean, if the Knicks want to develop him, and if they're going to develop him, I don't know if pushing him to win that rookie of the year, you know, is the smartest idea. I think, you know, if they're going to keep him between 20 and 25 minutes, keep him between 25 minutes and let him grow, you know, let him, I don't know if you guys, I was listening to New York Sports Radio the other day, and they were saying, I forget the NBA guy they had on, maybe somebody they had on, and they said that his window is going to be in 4 years. And he's going to be the man in 4 years. And that's the biggest hope that Knicks fans have. What do you guys think about that?
Right.
Me, myself, the way I'm seeing him perform right now, I think he could be good before then. 4 years.
Oh, I think he could be good before then. I don't think he's the man. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, the man. Well,
yeah, the man. Because, like, think about it. Like, the game before he had 29 and 12, whatever he had like 9 and 6. You know, and the game before that, he had like 11 and 7. You know, he's had a couple games where he's, you know, been less than 10 points, 7 or 8 rebounds, you know, something like that. Like, I'm talking about, you know, 26 and 10. You know, like, I think he's 3 or 4 years away from that. That's what I'm talking about when I say the man.
Yeah, that's hard to gauge. I mean, who knows, you know, I mean, how fast he can project out. But he definitely has that kind of potential. Somewhere along the line, you could see it where he could be a high-point producer and a big-time rebounder all together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we're sitting on a pot of gold right now.
Right. Now it's up to Phil to build around that pot of gold.
Well, yeah, sure. And that's gonna be the most interesting question moving forward. It's like you have Porzingis, who I think will eventually – he's showing the defensive ability to be a center eventually. And you're going to have a Robin Lopez who's a young guy who's – again, I think he is – yeah, you could say he's overpaid to the old standards, but I think for value, I still think he's – when the cap is $100 million, he's making 14 of it. That's 14% of the cap. And he might have trade value. And say next year, come the trade deadline, it's clear that Porzingis is best suited at the five, and maybe Carmelo eventually, you know, moves to the four. You could probably get something of value for Lopez. And what kind of guys do you put? Do you try to get a guy who is 21, 22, or do you get another guy who's 27, 28, and you kind of want to build a team that is able to peak when Porzingis peaks, you know?
Sure.
And that's why I'm excited about Jerry Grant and Langston Galloway, Peter Cleathony early, who showed some promise earlier on this season. These are guys that are going to be in their mid-20s at Porzingis' peak, and I think Jerry Grant really holds the key there once he develops, you know, an outside shot. You know,
well, now, Sean, let me stop you. I want to ask you a very good question because we clearly, like, between the three of us, I mean, people who are listening to this tomorrow or tonight right now may not understand that we have an ongoing conversation that's literally been going on for months. And it's not like we talk like once a day or like once every couple days. It's like 700 text messages a day between four people. Well, really three people. Tom counts occasionally. He'll throw something in there once in a while. But for the most part, it's like 3 or 4 people, like 700, 800 text messages a day. And it literally, this conversation has been ongoing. Between the three of us, obviously Pete and Tom, to me, I feel that the Knicks guard play is subpar in NBA standards. And obviously in a guards league, which the NBA has become, that's detrimental. Now, in your opinion, are we good 2 years, 3 years from now with Grant and Galloway as our starting backcourt?
Oh, well, I think we'll be a hell of a lot better. I think that Grant can be a Rod Strickland-type player. That's the best comparison I can make. And I think Galloway's averaged 11 points a game last year and this year. he could maybe be upside a 15-point-per-game scorer, but he's going to be a very good defender. So it's not like we're going to have Westbrook and Harden, but we don't need that. But I think that we have a core. If you have Porzingis with you have to have in today's NBA, you're right. You need to have a Porzingis with someone like at that level. You need to have two superstars,
right.
You know. And if Porzingis is going to eventually be a superstar, you need another guy like that. And so who is that guy? Jerian Grant's not going to be that guy. But Jerian Grant will be a very good, I think he'll be like a Mike Conley type, like I said, Rod Strickland. He'll be a guy who's a serviceable starting point guard. That's his upside. I don't think he'll ever be an all-star level point guard.
No, I
could be wrong. But I think he would be a starting caliber NBA point guard. I think Galloway could be
Greg,
a starting caliber two guard. But
I think we're lacking in the backcourt for sure. Galloway's a solid player. I look at him more as a backup, more as a guy that can solidify your backcourt, come in third guard, maybe roll, you know, play some solid deep 3-and-D type guy. We're still missing that dynamic player in the backcourt. I mean, when you look at what, you know, Steph Curry, I mean, nobody else has a Steph Curry or James Harden or Westbrook, you know, the top-tier guards in the league, John Wall. We don't have a guy like that. We don't have if we have Porzingis in the front court, you know, he could be a dominant big man down low. But we need to make it a significant upgrade in our backcourt in order to take it to the next level. And that may be something that during free agency we may look at with the cap going up. Maybe we can, you know, try to secure, you know, an upgrade in the backcourt. But right now, when you look at what's out there with other teams, we could definitely use another guard to put us up on that level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Here's my concern. The problem in the NBA today is that you've kind of – like, so the NBA has evolved to what the game allows you to do. So, like, the game used to be, you know, heavy hand check, pound the ball in, let's keep the games in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And that was, you know, that was the 90s and early 2000s way of basketball. Now, because of hand checking, because of the emphasis on the 3-point shot, because of all the sabermetrics, taking away the long two, obviously that's the least, you know, effective shot in basketball. Now you're forcing guys to be good at two things: getting into the paint and kicking to open 3-point shooters, or being good 3-point shooters themselves. So you look at guys like, even like a Brandon Knight or, it's another good example of a guy that can do both. You know, you got, I mean, even like Bledsoe is really not that good of an example, because to me, he's more of a scorer. But you look at some of these guys. I mean, obviously, you know, Curry being, you know, an anomaly, Chris Paul can do both. You know, to me, that's what the Knicks are missing. Not a high caliber point guard, but just someone that can do both. Because I feel Galloway can shoot and Grant can get into the paint, but they both can't do the same thing. And we talked about this, you know, for the last couple of years. The Knicks lacked two-way players, guys that were able to defend and score. And that's why, you know, you had two lineups, and you had the lineup that could score, but they all gave up a ton of points. And then you had the lineup that could defend but couldn't score. Well, now it's kind of the same thing where you have guards that can shoot or guards that can penetrate, but you don't have a combination of the two. So I think you need to find a guard that can shoot the three and can get into the paint. And when you have that around that, it doesn't matter if you have a Grant or a Gallo, because you can stick that guy next to him and they can all do what they do together. The sooner the Knicks can get someone like that, I think the better for them, because I think that'll help the development of Porzingis. It'll help Melo age.
Right.
You know, kind of the way Rondo and Ray Allen helped Paul Pierce to age, you know, towards the end of his career. You know, I think the NBA is changing, and it's, you need guys that can get into the paint, kick to shooters, move the defense, get open shots, and guys that can knock down threes. Because, I mean, Sean, if you're an NBA scout right now and you watch Grant play, what are you saying? You're saying make him shoot,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
You know, that's like, so you're not going to close out as hard on him as you normally would on a weak side closeout. And and you're not going to allow him to get in the paint. You're going to force him to shoot jump shots, and he's going to shoot, what, 20? I think he's shooting 28% right now from outside the lane.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's if he can become the shooter that Galloway jumped to, because Galloway wasn't this good of a shooter last year. If he can make the jump that Gallo did, I mean, now you're looking at something. Now you're looking at a –
all he needs – right.
If Grant could shoot, he would have gone top 10 in the draft easily. If he could shoot, he would have gone top 10.
All he needs to do is get to that magical 35% from downtown number.
Right.
Because he's in like the low 20s. And I think in college he shot maybe 34%, 33%. So it was close. But
right,
yes,
with the
22-foot
line.
That's what he needs to
get.
And so in today's NBA, you need that. But if you look around, I mean, there are maybe 10 guys in the NBA that could have that dribble drive penetration and knock down threes from beyond the arc. So to me, it's easier to be able to learn how to shoot from the outside than it is to penetrate and see the floor like Grant does, you know? So I think that's something that Grant can develop, but enough to be starting caliber. But I think no matter where you go, the Knicks need to have another superstar or star level talent next to Porzingis moving forward. And
so
really,
who's that
the only
star?
Way to do that is through the draft. I mean, really, that's the only way to do it. Unless Paul Pierce becomes, Carmelo becomes Paul Pierce in the next four years of his career. So, which I think is probably going to happen. I think that can happen. But
I hope so.
If the Knicks don't make the playoffs this year, this summer is going to be that summer where, you know, you might have a team that's on the fringe that says that Carmelo had a great year. Let's take a chance on him and we'll give you some pieces. And that might be young pieces. Like I said, we said this before. If Chicago calls with Meritage, Gibson, and Snell or something, you know what? If that's a team that you could build around Carmelo. I mean, build around Porzingis. Hey, you might have to do that deal because with the salary cap going up, you've already seen it. Jeremy Lamb got re-signed as a bench player for $12 million a year. Teams are re-signing their young talent because they might have upside because they know the cap's going
to
go up. So teams are holding on to their young talent. So it's like, either we're going to have to tank to get another superstar level or commit ourselves to Porzingis and this Porzingis and Carmelo nucleus and move forward.
Did I hear you say
tank? It's a tough choice. Was that?
I hear you say tank again? No way.
say what again?
I said, did I hear you say tank again? We're not doing that again.
I mean, honestly, though, Sean,
if you think about it,
how hard is it to strike gold in the draft more than once? Think about how hard it is.
Cleveland tried and they failed.
Right,
they
Cleveland tried to do it. Philly's been trying to do it for the last 5 years. They can't get it right. Boston, look at the amount of draft picks that Boston's had.
Right.
I mean, really, Terry Rozier was taken, what, a pick or two after Grant? And the guy can't even sniff the floor. He wasn't even a good I didn't even think he was a good college player. You know, I think draft picks, I think you have to have a mix. I think you strike gold on a draft pick, you get good, you develop some good young guys, you have some stars, you have some old vets, you got to get, I think the Knicks are realistically one solid piece away. I really do. I really think they're one solid, solid piece. Like a Brandon Knight or a Mike Conley, I'm trying to think off the top of my head now.
Those are good names.
Good guard. Mike Conley is at the top of my list. I mean, he's that guy. He's that lead guard. He's that pick and roll guy. You know, he can get 18 to 20 points. He can get 12 assists. I mean, he's a good defender.
Do you think Grant can ever? Do you think in 3 years Grant has the ability to be Mike Conley type? I think he can. I mean, he's got the body type. He's smart. Do you think he has that upside? What do you guys think?
I think he might.
Greg?
I think so, yeah. I wouldn't sell him short. He's got all the tools. He's got the height. He's got your quickness. I mean, you know, first steps to get into the lane. He's just got to work on that shot and just improve. I mean, he's got the pedigree. He's a Grant. He's going to want to get better, so I wouldn't sell him short.
All right, so this offseason, I mean, you look at it like we just talked about a little bit with the cap. I mean, everybody's going to be trying to re-sign their own young players, and everyone's going to be flush with cap space. But how good do the Knicks have to be in your mind? I'll start with you, Greg, to be in the consideration for a guy like Kevin Durant or Mike Conley to even consider coming to New York? Do the Knicks have to be a 35-win team? Do they need to make the playoffs before guys like Conley and Durant even seriously consider New York? Like, what is that number? 35 wins?
I think they
need the playoffs.
I think they need to make the playoffs. Whatever that number is, I mean, the East is actually, I know it's only 12 games into the season, but the East is actually has a better record than the West right now. So I don't know if that trend is going to continue. So if it does, the Knicks right now at 500 are 10th in the East. That's not even good enough right now, 41 wins. So they might need 43 wins to get into the playoff picture. But I think being a playoff team would make these guys say, okay, they made the playoffs last year. If you add me to that team, we can make some noise in the playoffs. So I think it's paramount for the Knicks to get into the playoffs this year, just so that the perception of these guys is that, okay, they were a playoff team last year. So that's the way I look at it. How about you, Frank?
Oh, yeah. I think, obviously not having their own first-round draft pick. And on one of the better moves I think Phil Jackson made in the draft, obviously, you know, like the later round, he picked up Willie Herengoats, or however you say his last name. I think he's your first-round pick next year. So I thought that was a good move. Who knows if he'll end up being anything. I've watched some highlights of him. I think he's a pretty good player. He fits that big mold, 6'11", 7 foot, can run the floor well, good shot blocker. He's got some post moves, which I like. So he's kind of your project for next year, which is good. I just, without a draft pick, you have to try and make the playoffs. I don't know if the Knicks at the deadline make a move to put themselves over, maybe get another veteran point guard or get, depending on what they have, who do you try and move a Derek Williams at the deadline for someone? Do you move a Klay Anthony early at the deadline to make the playoffs? I don't know. I think you have to try and make the playoffs, though, because you don't own your first round draft pick. You need to show, okay, they're in the right direction. They won 17 games last year. They won 37 games the year before that. Now let's win 42, 43 games and see what happens. And then over the summer, you add another piece. Maybe you're back up to winning 48, 52 games again. That's best case scenario. I don't think this team wins more than 42 games. I thought they were a 35 to 37 win team. But that was again, not seeing the whole picture. I thought that, a 20 game jump was a big jump. Again, last year, it's funny, like a lot of analysts will use the 17 game win season as like a benchmark. And I don't really understand that because, yes, I understand that they were, well below 500 with Melo, but Melo wasn't right after the second game of the year. And everyone that watches the Knicks knew that Melo wasn't right. Like there was something about, like, even if he scored 27 or 30, like I looked at some of his game stats from last year when Tom and I did a show a couple weeks ago, and he was the Knicks leading scorer in just about every game. So, but when you watched him, and Greg, I mean, you see him in person, twice a week, there was something that wasn't right about him. And to say that that's what they were last year, a 17 win team, I think I just think it's wrong. I think they were closer to the 37 win team that they were the year before with that roster last year. So I would be disappointed if they win less than 35, but I don't think they win more than 43.
Yeah.
So if the Knicks do that, say they don't make the playoffs, but they have 40 wins. To me, I really started thinking about this, and I'm like, if you're Kevin Durant, and say something, or Mike Conley, and say Memphis or OKC have a disappointing year. Either they get knocked out of the first round, or Billy Donovan doesn't work out, and OKC doesn't make the playoffs. If it's something that obviously, for Durant's case, if Westbrook is not committing to OKC, if he tells Durant, you know what, I really don't know what I'm going to do, do what you want to do, say that happens and OKC is disappointing. He's looking for teams around the NBA. A lot of people talk about Miami. A lot of people talk about LA. The Knicks are one at Washington.
Washington
probably is what. But look at Washington is like another place where you know he's been talked about. If the Knicks were a 40-win team and you're good friends with Carmelo and Porzingis is showing, say he continues to average 13 points and 9 rebounds a game, say he just does what he's been doing all year long consistently.
Right.
Don't you kind of think that if I teamed up with Porzingis and Melo, that would be way more dangerous than teaming up with Wall and Beal in Washington?
I don't think so, Sean. The only reason why I don't think so is because Washington has guards. I mean,
yeah.
He's got one of the better backcourts in the league. So you
but
throw
you
Durant
really,
in
if
with
you have,
those guards.
Yeah, I guess. But if you have Grant and Galloway, I mean, but you're playing. I mean, how do you guard Kevin Durant, Kristaps Porzingis, and Carmelo Anthony? Like, how do you stop those three guys in the triangle where basically every shot open to them is like money for them? Because we've never
I'll play devil's advocate, Sean.
Yeah,
who do they stop? Like, how are you matching? So, obviously, you have Porzingis at the 5, Melo at the 4, and KD at the 3. And you're going matchup-wise. Now, do you have Gallo and Grant then? Or do you have Aflalo and Grant? I mean, to me, like, when you look at some of the other teams around the league, like, the only team to me that has a chance at Durant that Durant doesn't really fit is the Knicks. And the only way he fits the Knicks, to me, is if you move Carmelo Anthony. I mean, I truly believe that. I think if you move Melo, like, let's say you trade Melo for a young point guard and, you know, a big, you know, you do the trade that you just had with the Bulls, right? Mirotić and Schnell and somebody else, right? Let's say you do that trade. Now – Durant has a defined spot. I mean, I just don't know if – I don't know. Do you guys – does Durant fit? Like taking your Knicks fandom out of it and obviously wanting Durant to be here because he's a top 2 player in the league, I mean, does he fit right now?
I'll let you go first, Greg. Yeah, because I know I'm going to have a lot to say. Go for it, Greg.
I guess the way you're probably going to match it up is Carmelo's going to play the 4 and Durant's going to be the 3, right? So you're going to have a 7-footer playing the 3, and then you have a 7-3 guy on your back line. So defensively, I'm just wondering, are they going to be able to guard with those, you know? I mean, I know you know, Porzingis with his length at the back end of the defense, he should be able to, you know, his quickness, block shots, and all of that stuff. But I don't know. I mean, that would be an interesting lineup to have the 3 of them in there together. It looks a little weird on paper. Like Phil Jackson said about the Amari Carmelo pairing, it looks a little clumsy. So I don't know. I don't know if that works.
Yeah, I think it'll work because Carmelo is better defensively at the 4. But it will only work if Porzingis shows as the season progresses that you trust him enough defensively to move into that 5 spot. So that's a big if. It's totally a big if there. But if he doesn't show that ability, then I could see making the case. But to me, when you watch the triangle, when you watch it happen, we're just used to watching it in the last 2 years where there are guys that really can't shoot well getting a bunch of open shots, you know? And when you have those 3 guys on the floor offensively, you have to truly pick your poison because Carmelo at the 4 is a mismatch for all those bigs out on the perimeter. If you spread the floor with Durant and Carmelo Anthony on either wing and run high pick and roll with Grant and Porzingis, I mean, how does a defense stop that at all? Especially if you have Galloway also stretched out.
Yeah, you can't stop that.
And you have Galloway who's, you know, right now shooting 56% from 3. He was plus 35 last year. So you have five guys that can shoot, well, Grant won't, but four guys that can shoot above 35%. And now you have a guy, Durant, who, if you close out on him, could actually drive by you and finish. I mean, that to me is a nightmare's row. And I don't see how, like, that is not exciting to a guy who might be open to coming to the, to coming to a big market, who obviously is close to Carmelo. I think defensively you could make it work. I truly think you could. Durant's always played the three. He's played the four in spurts, but Scott Brooks was a very traditional head coach who started big lineups. You would have, you know, Baca and Steven Adams,
right,
and Durant at the three.
Right.
Cantor.
And so you're Cantor. Yeah. And what's and the truth about Carmelo defensively is that he's going to be 31. Durant's only going to be 27, right? He's 27 now, 28 maybe. But Carmelo.
Yeah, he'll be 27.
In 2 years, Carmelo's not going to be able to guard those small forwards. But Durant at 28, 29 will be able to. And you could hide Carmelo defensively at the four where he's guarding just a bunch of guys. And you have Kyle O'Quinn for the next 4 years to work off the bench. And this is even like we would have the money to do it just by stretching Jose. So you actually can have still have Robin Lopez as an overpaid but a backup center, you know. And so you just as long as Grant – the key to me is, like you said, I agree, Frank, the guard play. And maybe
right.
the guards don't have to be that great if you add a Kevin Durant. And maybe Grant and Galloway and a follow in some way are good enough. Because how the
yeah.
hell do you stop a front court like that? I don't see how you do.
Yeah, no, it definitely – I mean, I like the premise of it. I just – I'm trying to put myself in Kevin Durant's shoes. And I'm trying to say, like, I don't know what his true feelings about Melo are. Like, does he love that Melo goes 7 for 22 or 9 for 25? I mean, like, he has that with Westbrook, and he's got a similar version to Porzingis in Ibaka. I mean, Ibaka's not. I think Ibaka right now is better than Porzingis, but you know, Porzingis'
right.
ceiling is obviously higher than Ibaka's. But I mean,
right.
when you look at it, you know, like, let's say Cantor. Okay, so you have Cantor right now. He's signed to a 5-year deal. So you have Cantor,
right.
to me, is probably – I would take him over Robin Lopez. I think Robin Lopez is a little better
Ooh.
Defensively. Cantor's a little bit more of a threat offensively. I don't know. That's – if anything, it's a push. Okay, that's a push.
Mm,
now you have
okay.
Ibaka.
No way.
Now you have Ibaka – you have Ibaka with Porzingis. And now Ibaka is an established pro, a pro's pro. And he can, you know, he's starting to shoot the three a little bit. He's a rebounder. I mean, to me right now, he's better than Porzingis. Porzingis has the higher ceiling. Now you look at Westbrook. I think Westbrook is better than Melo. And
right.
they fit better together. Like, I think Melo and Durant would kind of step on each other's toes a little bit with who's going to take what shot. You know, so, like, I don't know
yeah.
if like, when he thinks about it, if he's like, oh, yeah, let me go play with Melo. Like, why not just stay and everyone love him in Oklahoma City and play with Westbrook? Or, now, what Greg said before, with the fit in Washington, I mean, John Wall wants to get 15 assists a game. And Bradley Beal wants to shoot the three. And you've got, you know, obviously you've got Marcin Gortat, you've got Otto Porter. You know, you've got some pieces there. They're probably going to win more games in the Knicks this year. You know, if not,
nah,
right around the same.
I don't know.
Well,
right
around the same. So, like, let's say the Knicks are between 37 and 44, and you know, they're right around the same. Now you have John Wall, who is a top 5 point guard in the league.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have
yeah.
Bradley Beal, who is younger. He's 23 years old. And he's a top 10 shooting guard in the league, and it's the city that you're from. You know,
yeah.
To me, it's just I don't know if like I don't even know if it's worth getting our hopes up, you know, about Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, should we be focused on a Mike Conley? Should we be focused on some of the other free agents? Maybe off the top of my head, I can't remember some of the other big free agent names. I know there's not many, but there's a few.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just trying to think.
You know what? One that's
about,
interesting
like,
is Batum.
Reasonable.
Batum would be interesting at the small forward.
I like Batum.
But Carmelo would have to play the four. I think Batum is just crafty enough. He's a good ball handler. He's a solid shooter, solid defender. I think he would be a good fit, but again, you're going to have to pay him $18 million a year. But and then you have to
would you do that?
The four. Well, I don't know if the Knicks are committed to moving Carmelo at the four unless it's for a star. You know what I mean? So would I do it?
True.
It all depends. But I mean, obviously, I will take the crack for Durant. But would I want to give 18 to 20 to 22 million over the next 3 years, 24 million to Batum, or would I just say let's just keep on building around Porzingis and letting things happen? I might just do that, keep the cap space. But I think Durant is the guy, Conley's the guy. These are guys that are going to put you to the next level. Those are the only two guys that could really take the Knicks to the next level.
What do you guys think about Kemba Walker? I know his – did he re-sign or what's –
yeah, I
know
think he did.
He did re-sign?
I think he re-signed for like a $12, $14 million a year deal. I'll look it up right now to be sure.
Was it a long-term deal or –
let's see here.
I want to say it was like a 3-year deal, maybe.
He'd be a good guy to throw in that rotation. He's a guy that
can penetrate. Right. Because he's someone that I could see, New York
and
kid.
And hit a shot.
Yeah.
Not afraid
you know,
of the moment.
Right.
He can hit a big
shot.
He's
exactly.
a New Yorker.
Like, and
know?
Is he, like, is he unreasonable? You know, is that unreasonable?
Yeah.
Like,
that's a great contract. You know? He's getting paid $12 million a year for the next 4 years. It doesn't go up or down. It's just a straight. He's paid through 2019 with no option.
I would love that contract.
Here's
my question to you guys. So now what do they do with Aflalo next year? I mean, he obviously is going to need a new contract. The Knicks only signed him to a one-year deal with a second-year player option. You know he's going to decline the option. Hopefully the Knicks sign someone else before they sign him. But let's say Aflalo has a good year. He stays relatively healthy. Someone offers him $18, $19 million, because he does have a player option. So he declines the player option, becomes a free agent. You know, what's his deal? I mean, there's no guarantee that he's even back. Like, that's, are you guys re-signing him? Like,
no,
well,
I think he's opting in. If he continues to play the way he is, he's opting in because he's not going to get more on the market, I don't think. He's only averaging 11
why
a
not?
Game.
Why wouldn't he get more on the market? If he continues to play well, which he has since he's gotten into the lineup, with the salary cap going up and all the players looking for big raises, it's a no-brainer that he's going to opt out.
I read somewhere. Oh, I would let him go then, because
really,
I don't want to give him 12. He's not the same
player
as he was 2 years ago. But
the thing is, if Batum's getting 18, how does Aflalo not get 12?
Yeah.
How does Aflalo not get 13? If Batum's getting 18,
well, Batum's 26. Aflalo's going to be 31 in later on this year, and then it all depends on the type of deal. I heard, I don't know if this is true, but like through the grapevine, I don't know, I forget what article, that Aflalo has pretty much said he'll do whatever the Knicks want him to do. I don't know what that means, but it could mean, do what you got to do in free agency, renounce me, and then come back and sign me. Or if you want me to opt in, I'll opt in. I mean, you would imagine Aflalo and Carmelo have a good relationship. And you heard the interviews about Aflalo being so excited to play in the offense. The offense obviously fits him very well. He's a very good post-up mid-range shooter.
He's excelled at that.
I would basically say, the good news is that going into July 1, we will know. Aflalo will have to say if he's going to opt in or not. Derek Williams will have to say if they opt in or not. But I think Aflalo, I think it suits him well. I think he loves being at MSG. I think he loves playing at Carmelo. I don't know. I don't see him as a guy. He could have made more than $8 million on market this past summer, but he didn't. I mean, freaking Damari Carroll made over $15 million, and I don't know if he's that much more valuable than Aaron Aflalo.
Check out Carroll's numbers this year. He's not playing that well.
Yeah.
I mean,
Aflalo struggled in Portland. He had a bad playoffs.
Right. He was injured a little bit.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know how much he would have commanded on the open market this past summer. But if he has a great year and New York does well this year, I could see him wanting to get a big payday. I mean, how many more years does he have left? at you know, he's pretty much at his peak, you know, or at the tail end of his peak. So he's got to cash in. I would say.
I would let him go.
Here's my
Gallo
deal.
And start Gallo there. That's
if
what
you,
I would do.
If you're going to sign, if you're going to sign a Aflalo for 12, you might as well sign Batum for 18.
I agree.
If you're gonna pay him 12, I'd rather give Batum 18, and Batum's 5 years younger, and a little bit
right.
more versatile as a defender and a rebounder.
I mean,
they both can shoot the three just about the same. You know, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but judging off the top of my head, I would think they're about the same. But again, like if you're Charlotte, you just traded away Noah Vonleh, who's a great young piece, you know, probably going to be a starting power forward in the next 3 or 4 years. The kid was only 19 years old when they drafted him. They traded him away from Batum. I wouldn't be surprised if they maxed Batum out. Like if they gave him $20 million to start and, you know, like a 4-year, $88 million deal or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you know,
Michael Jordan is cheap.
which is the it's funny to say that out loud.
Well, you know, it is. You got so Charlotte. They've already committed to you. Seeing you know Kemba Walker for the next 4 years. MKG,
mm-hmm.
a new 4-year deal, and then now Jeremy
right.
Lamb. I just looked it up. It's actually about $7.5 million for the next 4 years for Jeremy Lamb. So those three guys are going to be key guys for them moving forward. They have Al Jefferson, who, you know, so they have those big question marks because you could kind of say MKG, I guess, would be the shooting guard, though he can't shoot. But a small forward, he might be a better fit. But, you know, we'll see. It's Charlotte has a – see if they make the playoffs and go from there because, Kaminsky's also going to – he looks like non-existent, though it's pretty early. But those seem to be core guys moving forward. But for them, Al Jefferson and Batum are both free agents this summer. So, you know, we'll see.
I would have to think that they re-signed Batum. I mean, I would love for the Knicks to get him. Like I said, in that scenario, like if you're not going to get a point guard, get talent, get guys that can play, get legit NBA players on your team. And, you know, if you can't get a point guard, I don't know if it's worth it. Like Sean, I mean, you look at the salary cap a little bit more than I do. Is it worth it to save that space this year with all the space you're going to have next year when the cap goes up again? I mean, is it worth
they're
it?
Like,
you know, I don't know.
Right. Well, there are only three guys to me. Truly, there are only three guys that deserve, like, not even deserve, but are worth that money. And we are hitting them on the head. Conley, Durant, and Batum, the guys that deserve $16 million or more, you know, and only because they're young or they're dynamic or they do a certain thing. A lot of the other guys, Knicks might, again, be better suited at getting these small pieces here and there, you know, like getting guys at $3 or $4 million that can play 25 minutes a game. And I don't know. Then you're kind of also committing to this mediocrity. You're committing to being a solid playoff team built around KP. So to me, if you want to be great, you have to get Durant or you have to make sure Carmelo can maintain his level of superstardom for the next 4 years. Or trade them. I mean, that's going to be the weird issue. That's why I think everything for the Knicks, everything comes down to Kevin Durant for them. If they can land Kevin Durant, then yes, they are on their friggin' way, no doubt about it. But if not, Conley can make them a 50-win team. But I don't know if Batum makes them a 50-win team moving forward.
No.
And then I think after that, if you lose out on Durant to me, then it's like, okay, you trade Carmelo. That's the way I see it, because then you could get as much as you can for Carmelo Anthony as possible.
Right,
because
now
Carmelo's
deal isn't that bad.
Right,
realistically, after
Durant.
The summer, right. So here,
he's not coming over for Porzingis. Oh, okay.
Sean, my phone's gonna die.
Yeah.
So here's the last thing I'm gonna say tonight before I leave you, fine gentlemen. The Knicks need to figure out two things. They need to figure out which direction they want to go. I think it's very difficult to play two sides of, oh, we're a young team, we're going to grow and mature into a good team, or we're going to be a team that wants to win right now. I think it's very difficult to do both of those things. And to me, if you're sold on Porzingis and you want to be built around Porzingis for the next 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, I wouldn't be upset if they traded Carmelo Anthony. I mean, after seeing what Porzingis can do, you know what? If you can trade him to the Lakers and get Clarkson and Randall and a draft pick, you know, I would do that right now. I would do it. You're getting two pieces and a draft pick.
You're forgetting one thing. Carmelo has a no trade clause. I mean, you're saying you're trading him. Does he want to be traded?
True.
Well, only
you know,
wants,
that's the other
yeah.
thing.
I don't think he wants to. I think he sees KP. In Carmelo's mind, he's like, oh wow, I can play with KP for the next 4 years. I really believe he thinks that now, you know?
He wants to win here. Same badge for a reason. He's been saying it. He said, you guys are stuck with me. Every time they ask him, he said, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And now he's a player with the potential.
I think he's not
seeing what this kid can do, yeah. you know? So I don't see him wanting to leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
But all I'm saying is that the Knicks, yeah, you're right. That's a good point because we're talking about the Knicks aren't any good. That Carmelo might want to go to a contender, but the Knicks are probably going to be always hovering for a playoff spot. I mean, if this continues, so if they're there, Carmelo's going to develop alongside Porzingis, and he'll be happy with that. So, and then at that point, I think you'll get a very, very focused Carmelo who's going to beg to go into the room with Derek Fisher, Steve Mills and Phil Jackson on July 1, and make the pitch to KD. And I don't know. I think the Knicks have a much better chance than anybody. I think they have a better chance than Miami. Miami doesn't have upside. I mean, and Washington and the Knicks are the two places. Because obviously, if you look at the Lakers, there is no coherent plan to what the Lakers are doing. There's no coherent plan. They don't even have a head coach for the future. With the Knicks, you can tell they've built a solid foundation built around the philosophy of Phil Jackson and Derek Fisher. You know, that's their philosophy, and they're trying to change their culture, and they have been. So at least Kevin Durant knows that. He would do with coaches and video coordinators and guys that he, you know, some of the guys that he worked with in OKC. And, you know, so I think the Knicks have a lot going for them, but we'll see. So what do you guys want to do? Do you want to wrap up, or is there more to discuss? Greg, I know Frank has to go. Frank, do you need to be let go?
Yeah, I think we could wrap up on this.
All right.
Reconvene on the next edition of the Knicks at Night podcast. I just want to give my buddy Peter Arturi a shout out. He was unable to make it, but he's a valued member of our team, and wanted to say, we miss you, Pete. We'll see you next time.
I know, man. Trying to get us four guys, five guys on at the same time with Nick games sprinkled in throughout the week, and I was under the weather yesterday. But, yeah, man, this is the Knicks at Night podcast. Sean, Frank, Greg, Pete, Tom, we do this at least once a week. You could download our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Knicks at Night, N-I-T-E. You can follow Greg on Twitter at gstrong011. Follow Frank at Frank Nutt, N-U-T-T. Follow Tom at Tom Baffa, 2 Fs. Follow me at SAQUINO34. Or Pete Arturi, I think it's something, man. You know, Pete, he just changed this recently. It has something to do. It's at Pete _ Arturi, A-R-T-U-R-I. And yeah, this is the Knicks Night podcast. Thank you for Kristaps Porzingis, and can't wait to see what he does against OKC on Friday night, Greg. It's going to be fun.
Yep. All right, man. All right. Catch you next time. Take care.
All right. Good night. Thanks for listening in, everybody. Good night.